Hello and welcome to another episode of the Jimmy Rex Show. Today on the podcast, I sit down with Nate Boyer, and he is a close friend of mine. Went and climbed Mount Kilimanjaro together a couple of years back as part of the Water Boys movement. But he also is a Green Beret, and he is the co-founder of Merging Vets and Players, MVP. Some of you may have seen the video, MVP, and he also is the host of the new TV show coming out called Survive the Raft. We get all into it on this episode. Can't wait to share this with you guys. Nate is somebody that, again, has served the country in so many different ways and excited for what he's doing now. He's always a mover and a shaker. So without further ado, let's get to the podcast with Nate Boyer.
Well, Nate, glad to have you back on the podcast, bro.
It's good to be here, brother. Really good to be here.
You know, something really cool, I don't think you know this, but from the last time we did a podcast, something really cool came out of that. So we did our first podcast, gosh, it was like 2019, I think.
Yeah.
And about 4 months after we did the podcast, I was in Oregon. A friend of mine was actually about to pass away. I went to visit him, and I had an Uber driver, and we got talking, and got talking about the podcast, and he said, well, who's some, you know, some people you've had on that maybe I've heard of? And I said, you know, I mentioned you, Nate Boyer. And he goes, you've had Nate Boyer on your podcast? And I said, yeah, you know who that is? He goes, I know exactly who that is. I'm a Niners fan. He's like, you know, the whole thing with Colin Kaepernick, with what happened. And so we got talking, and his son, he was a big black guy, this Uber driver, about 300-pound black guy. And his son had been killed by some white supremacists. And it was a big national story. It just happened to be my Uber driver this day. And he set up a foundation, his name's LeVar, and he set up a foundation to spread love instead of hate and try to, like, do some good with this whole thing. And anyway, long story short, I got talking with him. He's a giant Niners fan. His wife's a big Seahawks fan. And they were playing each other, like, 2 weeks later. And Fred Warner, the linebacker for the Niners, is a close friend of mine. So I hit him up. I said, dude, is there a chance you can miss some field passes for, I told him the situation. He goes, done. So I ended up flying this guy and his wife to San Fran. We went to the game on the field, had this beautiful experience. This whole thing happened. It all started because brought up your name as one of the people I'd had on the podcast. So that's really cool, man.
Wow. And thanks for sharing that, man. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's kind of a long intro, but it kind of lets people know, like, if you haven't listened to the old episode, I don't want to kind of go over the same stuff we did before, but, you know, you really hit the national news because you're one of those people that's willing to take on tough issues, tough conversations. And you, I mean, were right in the middle of that limelight when the whole thing was going down with Colin Kaepernick. And I felt like, you know, everybody was being pushed to the extremes. Yeah, either thought really hard this way or really hard this way. And you said, wait, let's have a discussion. Let's actually talk about this. And maybe, because that's what you've done with your new TV show. We'll get into that here in a little bit. But you're really good at being able to look objectively at situations. I try to do that with my podcast and just say, hey, wait. Well, let's lean into this a little bit. Let's try to learn from each other.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, a lot of it sort of, I think, stemmed from that, like, partly curiosity, wanting to sort of learn and hear somebody else's perspective and, like, where they're coming from, why they feel the way they feel, instead of doing what I and a lot of people do, which at some level you can't help. You're going to make an initial judgment. You know, you have that snap, that feeling, you know, of like, oh, like, I feel this way, like, so we're opposites, and I don't like you, you know what I mean? Like, you just kind of initially have that reaction, but we also have a choice from that to sort of slow ourselves down and assess the situation a little bit different and try to like genuinely listen to where they're coming from, why they're coming from that position, what experiences that they had in their life that you don't know about and you haven't experienced, or something that I'll never be able to relate to, like, you know, being a person of color and what that feels like and what that looks like in not only America, in the world. Like, it's got to be different. And I'm never going to fully be able to get a true sense of that. But maybe there's something in my life I can sort of relate to if I hear about, you know, what that's been like or what you've gone through, you know, and why you're so passionate about this thing. And at the end of the day, especially when somebody's trying to do good, they're trying to make the world a better place, even if they have a different approach or maybe even a different idea of what that better place looks like. If that's where they're coming from and their intent, there's no reason to judge that person without at least hearing them out and trying to understand that. So it was kind of came from a place of that, but also, as you mentioned, that feeling of everybody being so polarized and feeling like you have to pick a side and like, I got to be on this team or that team. And you know, as it relates to sports and just the American societal condition, we're very competitive people, which breeds success and a lot of other good things, but it also, there's a time where you kind of need to let that go. There's certain situations in life where it's like competitiveness isn't, like the obsession with winning in this situation is not actually winning. You know what I mean?
I say that a lot to people, say, you know, what would be the true win here? Because it's probably not winning whatever the thing is, right? A lot of times the win is you now get along with that person that you didn't before, or maybe you understand that person before. I think what you were speaking to at the beginning, you said, you know, we have that initial reaction. There's a Viktor Frankl quote, and I'm going to butcher it, but it's, you know, between stimulus and response is where we have our power to really kind of choose what we want to do there, right? Like, we all have that initial stimulus, but we do have, and there's power when you can learn to control and be, instead of being reactionary, to be able to be responsive. And that's where you actually take time to listen, understand, and then be able to respond without having the emotion behind it.
Right.
And I loved what you did because, I mean, you probably took a lot of heat from that. I mean, so for those that aren't familiar, we won't rehash the thing, but, you know, Colin Kaepernick chose to take a knee. You had met with him the day before. It was a big game, and you chose to stand next to him while he did that to show a different side of, like, and you were military. You were one of the more, call it what it is, like, well-known military people. You'd had a story where, you know, you'd been a Green Beret and you had been the long snapper at the University of Texas. You played with the Seahawks. And so you had this story that it was already out there. And so for you to put yourself out there in that spot, I mean, you probably took a lot of heat from that, I'm guessing. But, you know, in hindsight, looking back now with all this, I mean, there's still a lot of people that truly don't understand or have never tried to understand what that whole thing was all about.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely took some heat. I mean, a lot of it from the veteran community and even guys I served with, which wasn't fun. But there's no way I took even an ounce of the heat that Colin took and a lot of other people that sort of supported him took. And so I definitely have to, like, you know, absolutely respect that. I mean, it's a different type of heat. and I just, no matter what I felt like, being a part of that conversation, having that opportunity to meet with him, I mean, I'd be crazy not to, even though there was like that voice in my head saying, like, you know, it's going to change your life in some way doing this, going down and meeting with them. You know, I'd written this open letter, which I absolutely chose to do. And that was sort of to your point on the Viktor Frankl quote. That was the response I chose to make. I mean, I had that reaction when I saw him sitting on the bench during the anthem because of what the anthem means to me, those symbols, the flag. It's different because I was in the military and, you know, I carried my best friend's casket that was draped in an American flag. So like that, when I see that, I feel differently. And I didn't feel that way before the military, you know, that came with that. And not that I was, you know, unpatriotic, but it's just, you know, it hits different when you are absorbed in that sort of, that world. And when I had written that open letter, it was like, all right, this is how you feel, Nate, when you see this. But like, now that you've listened to Colin's first, you know, this 18-minute interview he'd given, and I kind of listened to his why. And also the fact that he actually had said in that initial interview that he had a great respect for people in the military. And I was like, that's awesome, but how come that's not, the public isn't hearing that? Mm-hmm. You know, the news, they're not reporting that part. They're focused on what's the most contentious parts of anything happening. And so I wrote this open letter saying that, you know, I respect, you know, respect why you're doing what you're doing. This is, you know, how I feel about these symbols because of my experience. But, you know, for me to pretend that I know what your experience is like is very unfair. And so, you know, he'd read the letter. He wanted to meet, and he'd asked if I would come sit down with him. And yeah, through our conversation, which was it was a conversation like we're having right now. It was very, it was like just two guys talking.
Yeah.
You know, just chatting about life and things and around some heavy issues, but a very, normal conversation that two that two people would have, two men, even though two men in a locker room, in a football locker room, maybe, where we've got very different backgrounds, but at the end of the day, we also like some of the same stuff and we agree on some of the same stuff. And he had just asked if there was another way. I thought he could protest that wouldn't offend people in the military. And, you know, the answer was there's no perfect protest. I mean, it's supposed to be uncomfortable.
For sure.
And there's always going to be people, you're not going to please everybody in life.
You can do that. You can be considered the greatest person in the world. And if they pulled enough people, there's a percentage that's going to think you're the worst.
Yeah, exactly. It's very true. And so just, yeah, from that, when he asked that, I thought being alongside his teammates was important. And then I suggested the kneeling thing and he thought it was better actually. We had a conversation about me even taking a knee with him. And I'm not gonna lie, I considered it. I didn't necessarily want to do that, but I felt like if he's willing to adjust, maybe I should too.
Sure.
And then I thought again, I mean, this is all happening very fast.
Yes.
I thought again about like, you know, I'm already.
And by the way, like I appreciate even listening to this because I think people assume that all these decisions are just made and people just like, and it's like, this is real though, you know, and things happen quick. And sometimes in life, even you might've done it and then you might've had maybe I didn't wish I did that, but it's not because you have these crazy politicized views either. Like your heart was in the right space. Like you're a Green Beret. What people don't know about Green Berets is 99% of what they do is more service than anything. I've talked to you about this in length, and a lot of what you guys do is the service. You are a service heart. We'll get into Water Boys and MVP and all the things you do. And so, you know, you're coming from this beautiful space, but if you'd taken that knee, I mean, I'm guessing you would have taken a hellstorm that you just weren't ready for. But it was a very human moment where you're just trying to do the right thing.
Right, right. And I didn't, at some level anyway, get that, like you had mentioned earlier, but yeah, I mean, I've been back and forth on that for a long time, and I think I would probably do what I did. I don't think I would change anything, but I don't know if it means more people listening to other perspectives and being more respectful of one another. It's worth being a bit of a martyr for that. You know what I mean? And I think that's how Colin fell. And then not everything, to be fair, not everything he's said and done. And since then, I agree with, you know, there's just things that I don't agree with, and that's okay. You know what I mean?
Well, that's a part too. Like you support someone in that moment. I mean, I remember when the cops with the pigs on it socks thing came out and it was like, oh no, now there's things that are like, he's really flaming the fire. And I'm guessing for you, you were just like, oh please, there's for a moment you just kind of wanted the whole story to die and go away.
It was also hard to tell, and I still don't even know, like, you know, were those photographs, for instance, was that before our conversation or after? Maybe it came out after, but I don't know. And it's like, it's hard to tell what's real. You know what I mean? If not anymore.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of different people when it comes to, you know, getting my news and information. I listen to a lot of different people with a lot of different viewpoints.
Man, yeah.
People that I think I respect as people, regardless of that, but I'll watch a lot of different networks just so I feel like I can gather what the actual story is in my own mind, because there's a narrative behind.
Well, I'll say this, anytime you're leaning into curiosity, anytime you're trying to learn from other people, anytime you're trying to empathize and just understand somebody better, you're doing the right thing. And I wish more people would have open conversations. I wish more people would be open to the idea. You know, I talked about this with you after we were coming from the airport. You know, I platformed someone the other day. I did a podcast with a very famous or infamous, depends on how you want to look at it, trans person. And, you know, I took some heat from that. But all I wanted to establish from that entire podcast was maybe we should just have conversations and then try to understand each other. On the podcast, we don't agree on a lot of things, like, and we don't need to. But if we can sit down like you and Colin did, and that's what I love. I really love and admire that about you. And I want to get in, we're going to have to back into all this stuff you're doing, because you always have so many things going. But just because we're on this topic, you have a TV show coming out in a couple months, and you kind of lean into this issue a little bit more. Tell us a little bit about that. I think it's the coolest idea. I love that you're doing that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I appreciate that. It was a show that was developed for Discovery Channel I think they've been developing over the last couple of years, like trying to figure out how to tell the story. So back in 1973, 50 years ago, there's an anthropologist named Santiago Genovese, who was from Mexico, and he wanted to put people on this on a raft, right? 10 people from very different backgrounds, from, you know, religious beliefs, race, politics, you know, everything, men and women, put them on a raft and float from the Canary Islands in Spain to Mexico across the Atlantic.
Wow.
101 days. And just to see if, like, when the going gets tough, can these people put all those differences aside and work together? And because there's going to be moments where they're going to be at each other's throats. I mean, even if you agree with somebody,
a lot of downtime on the ocean, yeah, but then there's a lot of tumultuous diving.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they packed for the 101 days, but they all got to, like, make food and do the chores, and there's weather, and there's all these things that they're combating. And during the experiment, I don't know if it's surprising or not, but a lot of these people, they really kind of came together. They really bonded around this experience. And he even, at least the story goes, he even sort of tried to throw in a few flashbangs, you know, and, like, get things shaken up, and there was almost like a mutiny because they were like, no, we're fine, like we got this, you know what I mean? And he's like, well, you know, what about what this person maybe said this, and they're just like, what are you doing, you know, what are you trying to do here? And so the idea of that, and it was in 1973, it was also a pretty divisive time, the end of the Vietnam War, Watergate, all these things are happening. It's 2023 now, and we wanted to recreate this experience, and it's different because it's also a competition series, you know, similar to like a Survivor type show on TV, but with the element of this social experiment where we're in Panama, around the Pearl Islands down there. And, we've got these people on this raft, from all these different backgrounds, same kind of thing. And they got to live there together, and they got to work together, not only to survive, but also, you know, to play this game essentially. Or I guess it's not even a game. It's to, you know, be involved in this experiment.
Yeah.
There is competition within that, which is cool. And it's some of it's self-serving and some of it serves the team. And there's moments throughout you have to make that decision. Like, am I going to take this thing just for me? You know what I mean?
Or too much, you're going to get kicked off the raft.
But there's also an element of secrecy, like protection for them, so that no one knows who did this thing. But it's like when you're spending time with these people, you're probably making judgments about them and learning about them and sort of trying to uncover that mystery on your own, like who are the people that are, you know, for the team wholeheartedly and who maybe are a little bit selfish.
Wow. And so you were able to cast just all types of different people.
Yeah. So they cast all these people. I mean, they found these very interesting people. And honestly, like, pretty great people, like, from all over the place, you know. And
What was the most out there character? Where are they from, or maybe just one that's just?
Yeah, I don't know if I guess. I don't know if I should. I don't know if I don't want to get in trouble.
Fair.
I don't
want to. Let's not talk.
Because this is like this.
It's called. What's the name of the show?
Survive the Raft.
Okay, and it comes out.
It comes out in July, right out of Shark Week, and it'll be a Discovery, and it'll be on HBO Max, which is actually going to be this new streaming platform just called Max, with Discovery and HBO Max merging. So.
And you're the host.
I'm the host, yeah.
Are you the one that gives them the final rose or kicks them off or whatever they can do it?
Kind of, yeah. Like, explain the challenges there's some interesting elements that continue to shake things up as the show goes on. But I think the reason I ended up getting selected for this was I believe through you know, what had happened with Colin Kaepernick and then, you know, obviously my background in being in the military and doing these different things, kind of having this different,
of course,
I guess, colorful background that's just varies quite a bit. But, you know, starting from there and, like you're doing, you know, leaning into, listening to people with different backgrounds, having that conversation, trying to, find the humanity in any situation, you know what I mean? That curiosity, I think, made sense for the show for me to sort of to sort of host that and also learn about these people myself and like why they make the decisions they make.
I can't wait to watch it. Are you actually on the water for the filming of it then on the raft?
Yeah. Was
that pretty difficult?
It was. I mean, they're there.
Right.
Contestants the entire time. Yeah. They live together. They work together. They sleep. I mean, it's crazy. But a little different for me. I mean, I was, you know, away from the raft for a good amount of time. I wasn't, and that's very clear in the show. There's no like cheat where they act like I'm sleeping.
Green Beret, what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah. I arrive, you know, and leave and arrive. Yeah. And leave and like, yeah. Anyway.
Well, that's really cool. One of our friends so I really got to know you better when we went to Africa.
Yeah.
We climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, worked with the water boys building water wells over in Tanzania and Kenya. And one of the guys that was with us, Dave Vibora, another NFL football player. I don't know, did you ever watch the episode he was on? It was called Just the Raft.
No, I haven't, but he told me about it. Yeah. No, and I know about the show. I'd never watched it.
Yeah.
If I would have known DV was on it, I would have watched it.
Yeah, I watched now it. Now I got to go back. It's hilarious. Well, it's basically only two people on the raft.
Are the episodes sort of standalone? Can you just watch? Oh, yeah. Could I just go watch them?
Yeah, he's just off one episode. And it's what they do is they take two rafts and they mix their stories back and forth. So you're just watching one episode is his story. Yeah. And it was funny because they put him with this random lady. She was, I think, a school teacher from Boston or something. And it's so funny because the whole point of it is if they can survive a week together on this raft and they have to get their own food. And I think they have water, but they have to pump it. If the one person quits, they both lose. Tap out. So half the time, he's just begging her not to leave the raft. Yeah, but it was very entertaining. Just, you know, and he ends up getting naked because he's getting chafed so bad.
Oh, my God.
They're trying to, like, manage that. And they didn't eat for a week. He said, I go, what did you eat? He goes, nothing. We never caught anything. We just didn't eat.
Wow.
Yeah.
Spoiler for me. Did they get through it?
They did. They made it. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, so I can't believe that show didn't last longer. It was entertaining to watch, also, because they find just these random things in the ocean. I can't wait to watch that, man. That'll be really fun.
Yeah, it'll be good. It sounds like a hybrid between that
and a little bit
and Survivor.
what did you learn? If you can speak to it, maybe you can't yet. But what did you learn watching these people in communication and watching them just coexist this way? What were some,
you know, something that I'd noticed from going to war, right, and being around, like, working alongside Iraqis and Afghans, and where we have very different custom cultures, beliefs, when you are in extreme circumstances, you know, the good people sort of show their true color. Well, everybody shows their true colors, but you gravitate towards those that you trust, you know, and those that are genuinely just good people at their core, and you know, in those situations, we wouldn't be willing to take a bullet for you. Mm-hmm. You know, even though we agree on maybe very little when we sit down and have a conversation about what we think is right and wrong, there's still like that we've kind of find in each other. And I think in this show, I saw that as well quite a bit. Like these people that, you know, they're going to put aside the similarities they maybe have with other people on the raft, that like, okay, you and I, like we believe in, you know, we both voted this way and we believe in the same religious practices and all that. And then this person who have nothing in common, but like for whatever reason, they seem more selfless, you know, and more about the team. And I just, that's more important to me right now, because right now we need to get through this situation. So maybe a normal life where it's not as extreme circumstances. It's not, I mean, the show wasn't really life and death, but maybe in some ways, I mean, it was, you know, there was a survival aspect to it. So seeing that as people that end up gravitating towards each other, who normally you'd never see having a conversation or, you know, together at anything, walking down the street, whatever, they're just, I think watching them grow, you know, was huge. Watching them kind of put that stuff away. That's just that auxiliary stuff's not really who we are. And kind of get past it. That was really interesting.
Well, one thing I like about the concept of that is one of the things I've said is, you know, in 2023, in a lot of areas, there's just not that many real issues that we have to deal with, life and death. Where's the food coming from kind of things. And so we do let a lot of these issues create themselves that really would never exist if we were all worried about where we were going to get our next meal from. Or, you
know, and that's why a lot of other countries don't have the similar issues that we have from that standpoint, because they're dealing with food, water, shelter, medical care, education. Mm-hmm. You know, where we're not perfect in those worlds, but we have access to, for the most part, mm-hmm. pretty much everybody. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of parts of the world, like for with water boys, you know, the lack of access to clean water, which feeds so many of those other things, like that, with that being your core issue, I think you're not worried about this.
Yeah, you don't have time. You're like, where are we getting water today?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
We're going to all go do this together. Well, one thing that obviously being part of the vet community, you saw firsthand a lot of the issues that these veterans have coming back from the military, coming back from war, or just from, you know, being deployed. And you decided to start MVP, which I think is amazing.
Thank you.
And maybe speak to exactly what that is and why it was so important for you to set that up and what it means for the vets that get to be a part of it.
Yeah. MVP was started, I guess, 7 years ago now. And I co-founded it with Jay Glazer. Jay is a Fox NFL personality. He's like the ultimate football insider, also the MMA world. I mean, he's working on draft stuff right now. You know, like, this guy's always working, always like involved with that game. And technically he's a journalist, but he's a very different type of journalist, because the players, the coaches, the GMs, they hang out with the guy. They're friends with him. You know what I mean? They train with him. They go out to dinner with him. And you don't really see that in that world, because, you know, the media is the bad guy. It's the enemy. Because they're out to get you, and Jay's not out to get you. You know, he's got to do his job. He's got to report the news, of course. But he understands, and they understand that, you know, through these relationships he's built and the friendships, there's that level of trust and understanding. So if something happens, if it's something negative, hey, we got to tell the story, but like, how are we going to do this where you feel comfortable, where it's going to be your voice, you know what I mean? So it's not just somebody else telling your story and what happened, you know, like, how do we figure that out? And then when good things are happening, make sure to report on that too. You know what I mean? And he's so involved in so many transactions around sports. And even, like, I mean, I've seen it firsthand where it's, coaches are calling him like, well, you know, what's this guy like? And it's like, they're asking Jay Glazer
he's a true insider, yeah, because because he's earned their trust and respect.
Totally. Yeah, just a very different level. So Jay, he helped train me when I was trying out for the NFL. I mean, I got done with college ball in 2014. It was my senior year. Played in a senior all-star game in early 2015. Had actually ended my time in the military in February of 2015. And so I did no longer had that uniform and locker room and all that. And then I was putting all my eggs into this NFL basket, just seeing what, you know, I'm going to take it as far as I can. And he opened up the doors to his gym. He helped get me prepared. He helped get me my agent. And I had two offers from at the time they were in St. Louis, the St. Louis Rams and the Seattle Seahawks. And I went to Seattle because, I mean, that team was, and he'd been to back-to-back Super Bowls. Yeah. It was like, all this stuff was happening, and it just was like, man, I can't pass that up, even if it doesn't last very long. And it didn't, you know. I was there for about 5 months. I was in, you know, off-season and in training camp and played in the preseason, and I loved it. And, but when that ended, you know, all of a sudden I went from having that locker room also, and that uniform to identify with, and that sense of purpose and mission and camaraderie, to now being out of football too. So I was 34 years old. I definitely felt like I peaked, and I felt like, okay, I already did this military stuff, I did this football stuff. What am I going to do next? I even considered maybe going back into the military or playing in, you know, one of these other startup leagues that were happening at the time for football, and just trying to grab onto anything that I felt connected to and that I put a lot of effort and time into. But just feeling like, man, this can't be it, you know? And when those things didn't really end up working out, I had to figure out that next thing. And luckily I had this passion and drive and the work ethic that I really learned from the military and confidence in myself to kind of go after chasing the storytelling dream, which I'm doing now. but I didn't have a team. I didn't have that locker room. And Jay was really the person who suggested, like, why don't we, there's a lot of people in your shoes. I know in football, I know in the MMA world, I'm willing to bet in the military that they get out still pretty young, a lot of life left, very capable, you know, but don't know where to start and don't feel like they have anybody that's got their back anymore and someone they can kind of go to and lean on. And so they'll isolate, you know? And I said, yeah, well, vets do that big time.
Well, the two groups that probably do that the most are athletes and vets, right? I mean, even if you have a long career in the NFL, you're done by 35.
Yeah. You know? No, and Tom Brady's a total anomaly. Yeah,
of course.
To play to 45.
Yeah.
That's like,
I had a conversation with Haloti about a week ago.
He's a good guy.
And, you know, he climbed Mount Kilimanjaro with us as well. We've been close friends ever since. And we were just chatting, and he's like, man, I'm ready for something. He's like, he's feeling that, like, purpose. You know, and I mean, Haloti was the highest paid defensive player in the league for a couple of years. That dude has no need for needing to do anything, but he's been wanting to be the dad for several years now. But even he at this highest level, like, there's like this purpose. And I think I've spoke to you about this before, is with the military, that is the biggest problem when they come home, is you have so much purpose when you're part of the military and you get back and yeah, you have, you know, you get treated well, you get tickets to games, but what these guys need more than anything is that next purpose. And I think you going through that firsthand, both with the NFL and military, is why you're the perfect guy to do what you're doing with helping these people to find that purpose again.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. But that's something that I definitely noticed, that, you know, Jay had suggested. I hadn't really thought about it because I'm always careful, and I think a lot of people are, especially in sports, to make a comparison to, you know, going to war and playing a game, because they are very different things.
For sure.
But that locker room and that, yeah, like that camaraderie, and you said it, that needing a mission, like a new mission, that's the same. You know what I mean? And especially when you did it in a intense environment. Of course, getting, you know, shot at, mullets, you know, whizzing around a battlefield, it's different than running down on kickoff and, you know, trying to avoid getting crucified. But it's also the same in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And then that is something that I felt and didn't even know I needed until the football locker room was gone. I never really feel like I transitioned out of the military. I mean, I did, but I had something to go right to, another challenge, you know, another mission and something, a reason to, like, okay, I got to get up at 6 and I got to eat this and don't eat that. And then we got workouts and we got recovery and then we've got practice and this whole schedule and, you just got to show up, and you got to show up with, obviously they say the military, right time, right place, right uniform. To be successful, you also have to have the right attitude. You have to have, you know, the right work ethic. You have to, you can control
right way
the of
taking
effort.
Care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like doing the,
all the things you can control, you know, from an effort standpoint, you have to do at the highest level, but otherwise it is laid out for you. You know what I mean? And then when you don't have that anymore, and you can kind of do anything, it's interesting, but it's also kind of daunting and terrifying, because you're like, I don't know what I, like, I don't want to, I know how hard I'm going to work if I choose something, but what if it's the wrong thing, you know? And I put all this time and energy, and it's like, maybe it will be, and that's okay. But, you know, you got to get out there and just try things until something feels
right.
Starts to,
a lot of times you find it in the try, right? But it is a daunting thing, especially if you've always just been told kind of what you needed to kind of go do.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's yeah, really smart. I mean, the I say this often, like, the universe will sort of do its thing. You got to stay open to it and listen to it, but continue to control those things you can't control. And, you know, that's almost all from an effort standpoint, or just like that, you know, a willingness or a, you know, put the ego away and just, like, you know, put yourself out there and go for it. But at some point through your effort, doors will start to open. It might not be the door you
that's right
thought you were going towards.
Yeah.
It's like, go.
Somebody will notice your hard work. Somebody will notice your effort and things if you're going, putting yourself out there, and eventually the wrong thing will lead to the right thing. You know, it's like, the way I look at it is kind of like, it'd be like, well, I don't want to go on all these dates because what if it's the wrong woman? Well,
right.
You're probably going to find the right one by,
yeah.
You know, being there with a lot of the wrong ones. But
that's good for you.
So specifically, what is the mission of MVP? I don't want to get into the movie quite yet. I want to kind of let people understand a little bit more what MVP itself, the organization, does.
Yes.
And then we'll talk about kind of the movie and you just deciding to be a Hollywood director as well, just because, like, why not be? When I think of the hardest things that you could just become, Green Beret, NFL football player, and Hollywood director, probably three of the top five on the list, and you've just chalked off all three. So I'll think what the next hardest thing is. I'm sure that's what you'll be doing next time I talk to you. But
yeah, I mean, I'm definitely attracted to that challenge. But it's also things I do enjoy and I love, you know, and I'm passionate about. But yeah, so when Jay made that
made that observation.
Observation. Yeah. Thank you. Jay made that observation of the similarities, right? In some ways, and he presented it to me. And like I said, initially I was like, I don't know, I don't want to compare these. And he's like, no, we're not talking about what you're doing on the field. We're talking about in the locker room. I was like, yeah, you know what? That is exactly the same. And I'm going through it right now. And so we decided to start this organization called Merging Vets and Players. And I mean, the mission statement is, you know, we bring together combat vets and former professional athletes to help them find purpose and identity when they lose a uniform. And we started in Los Angeles at his gym. You open the doors to the gym, and every day, once a week, we were bringing in combat veterans and former pro athletes to work out together for about 30, 45 minutes, and then just to huddle up and talk through our stuff. And that conversation can go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's really heavy stuff, you know, but when somebody's going through something, we want them to have that safe space to share it. And then let's rally around them, trying to help them through with some ideas and like what worked. I've been in a similar situation. I felt this way. They're going to maybe listen to me because we have that shared experience.
Well, it's very difficult for, to feel somebody outside of your own industry as military or NFL or just pro athletes in general that truly can understand you. But I think those two worlds just do go side by side so well that, you know, all of a sudden you're like, oh, this dude actually has a different experience completely. But now I feel understood. I feel seen by another human that wasn't necessarily my military guys, you know. Right. So I think that's why it is probably creates such beautiful conversations, is those, you know, people that at our core, we want to be understood. We want to feel seen. And I think when you get people that have had enough of a similar experience, I bet it just absolutely just creates such a deep, meaningful relationship very quickly every time those guys meet up.
Yeah. And I think from my experience, it's opened me up to the willingness to take advice or seek advice from people that aren't even in the military or played sports. Because, like, what else do I have in common with them? You know, I don't have to just base all my commonalities on what I did for my job. You know what I mean? And it becomes very much a part of you. It is you. It does feel like it's you at the time, but it is a job at the end of the day. You know, you're enlisting in the military. You're making the choice to pursue professional athletics. Like, you're doing those things as, you know, that is your profession. And the uniform really isn't you, even though it feels like it at times. So I think it's helped me open you know, sort of bridge an internal divide I had with the civilian community, you know, things like that, and conversations with people like Colin. Like, that's all that stuff kind of works together. So the first vets we were having up there too, and this, and the movie is sort of about this, which is a good bridge to that, is like there was a homeless shelter. A veteran homeless shelter on Sunset Boulevard. It was called the Hollywood Veterans Center.
By the way, is this a true story?
Yes.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah. And so this place, it actually closed down several months after the COVID lockdown, right? They lost some funding and it was tough already. It's like this place had 48 vets living here. And it was on, it's in East Hollywood on Sunset. Jay's gym is on Sunset in West Hollywood. So both on Sunset Boulevard in LA, but very different places, very different feeling. I went down there one day and met some of the vets living there. And there was one in particular that I met. His name's Denver Morris. He's actually now runs our Dallas chapter. He moved out here, kind of set it up. The guy is incredible. He was a Marine. He is a Marine. Say he was.
It's one of those tricky things. I'm a Marine veteran too. Yeah. It was a Green Beret. It's like you are, like you always are once you've.
Right.
So, by the way, I apologize for that because even as I said it, I'm like, I don't think that's right.
Yeah, yeah. No, no, you're good. You're good. You're good. You're good. The Marines take extra exception too. They're really like,
well, that's a gym part of like, it's this new dialogue. It's like, I ate, literally, as I said, I'm like, oh crap. I hope that wasn't offense. I mean, no, I said that wrong, but isn't that funny that I would even think that, right?
Yeah, that's good that you do. Yeah. I mean, it's good that you do, that we're thoughtful enough it's to, fair. You know, yeah. to have that moment. But, yeah. But yeah, so I met this guy, Denver, and he'd been living in there for several months. He had attempted to take his own life three times. Most recently was just 4 months before I met him. And, you know, I just remember him like visibly shaking. Like he just was not comfortable in his own skin. And he didn't like the shame, I think, he felt of this guy who, you know, was in the military and played football. And maybe, you know, on the outside, I look all squared away, like I've got it all together, which I absolutely don't. But when I show up there, you know, in his mind, he's like, oh, I'm not a charity case. I don't need some guy to visit me. Sure. You know, like it didn't go well. And he ended up reading more about like my background and kind of talking to some other guys in the shelter there. And he wrote me an email, like a blind email, and said, hey, I don't know if you're going to get this. I hope you do. You know, I met you yesterday. I apologize if I came off a certain way, but this is how I felt. But I'd love to grab lunch with you or something, you know? And so like the next day we went and got tacos and, just sort of talked about, I told him about MVP, about this idea Jay had come up with. And I was like, I don't know how we're going to do this or what we're going to do, but you know, I just from seeing you yesterday and some of the guys there, like, and feeling like the you guys don't have that sense of confidence and pride maybe. It's wild to me because like, look what you've done. Like when he came from a unit that back-to-back deployments, they lost 29 guys overseas. They've lost a lot to suicide back home too, but he survived that. And he was like, you know, he was a leader and people look up to him and he stays pretty connected with his unit. 27 was the name of the battalion in the Marine Corps that he was in. And I'm like, just like, it's all about how you look at that experience, you know, like recognize, I know that you went through some really hard stuff. I can't relate to some of the stuff that you've gone through, much harder than I think I have ever experienced. But also recognize that, you know, the good that you did, the people that you helped, and the mission that you were committed to, and the fact that you made it back, and now you have this opportunity to live on in those people's honor and all this stuff, you know. And I was like, man, like that's really special, man. You got to share your story. And he was like, that's all I want to do. I want to share my story, you know? And I'm like, well, like, this is this thing Jay came up with. And he's like, who's Jay? And I'm like, showing pictures. He's like, oh yeah, I recognize that guy. And I was like, he's got this gym, you know, why don't you bring some of the guys up from here and we'll work out up there and then we'll huddle up and we'll just talk. I don't know. We'll get tacos again.
Sure.
And we did. And like it was like on a Sunday, the gym was closed. I brought him up there and I called Jay afterwards. Like, dude, this was so awesome. You got to come in. You got to come in next time. And if you can, bring some athletes. So in Jay Glazer fashion, he brings in Randy Couture and Tony Gonzalez, like two Hall of Famers in our sports, like the greatest to ever do it. And we sit in this circle, you know, after we work out together, we huddle up and it's like, Randy's also a veteran. He was in the Army before he went and became a 6-time,
you know, UFC champion.
Exactly. And Tony Gonzalez is 17
or two tight end of all time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like first foul.
Yeah. It's maybe Travis Kelce now, but
no, that's true.
It's one of those three. I mean, he's right there with him.
He never won a championship, so that's tough.
For a time, he was the best tight end ever. How's that? Because yeah. He was before them.
For sure. For sure.
But in his time. And he's the GOAT. He is. He's he's very.
What an athlete, too. Like, he could have gone to the NBA.
Oh, yeah. I met him. Yeah, he was all Pac-12, I think, at Cal. Yeah. I actually met him in Hawaii one time, and we were in a club. I was out there with my buddy who was playing for the Seahawks, and we just went out with him, and I'll never forget. I mean, Tony Gonzalez is just kind of perched up, and there was just women just everywhere and trying to get to him because he was also known as one of the best looking NFL players. I mean, dude's got some things going for him, but anyway.
Yeah, he's a really good guy, too.
That's hilarious who he brought the first time.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Exactly. And you know, like I said, we'll get into it, but in the movie, like we recreate that. Like, Tony's in the movie, Randy's in the movie, they're playing themselves, and we kind of recreate that first huddle, which was really awesome.
Wow.
With a lot of these same guys that were there. But yeah, Denver just like took this as like, this is my new mission. I'm going to build MVP for these guys. I'm going to do the outreach. I'm going to be boots on the ground in LA, find these vets, you know, pull them out of those dark places like I was in and bring them to the gym. And he did. And it just started to grow from there. And now, you know, we've got 8 chapters around the country. We almost grew too fast for a minute. So we're trying to like get our bearings and get,
I could feel
that. More organized.
My coaching group, I've been on pause on letting new people in for 4 months now. I have all these people and I feel terrible every time I get a message that somebody wants to join, but there is a lot of like, when you grow too fast on something, it creates a whole new set of problems. You do have to kind of pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah. Cause you can't let, you know, we can't let a chapter fail. We can't leave anybody behind.
You can't lose there. The culture. You can't lose the caliber, the quality, and all those things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's...
But that's amazing. So you have 8 chapters.
We have 8 chapters. Yeah. We opened our 8th one, which is Phoenix, I guess last summer. Yeah. Late fall. Late summer, early fall. Something like that. Anyways. So yeah, we opened... during COVID, we opened Seattle, Dallas, and then Phoenix, which are three of our strongest chapters now. It was incredible. We were just out there for the Super Bowl in Phoenix that week, and we had a little, you know, an event, like a little huddle at Arizona State, and like 150 vets and athletes shows up. It was like Jim McMahon was there. It was just really cool to see these people that had heard about it, wanted to be a part of it, and showed up, and it was awesome. But yeah, in 2020, when things were shut down, we had to shut down the gyms. We couldn't operate on that weekly basis like we were doing, was the time when I was like, all right, I've wanted to tell our story for a long time. I've wanted to find a way to do this.
And by the way, at that point, you guys have been going, what, about 4 years, three years?
Yeah, four years.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 years. Yeah. We were technically founded in December of 2015, but we didn't start operating in the gym like we were until kind of the spring, maybe April of 2016, almost exactly 7 months ago.
Yeah.
Or 7 years ago, excuse me. And, but yeah, at the time we'd been going about 4 years. And so we're really rolling. We got 5 chapters open at the time. We just opened New York like a week before lockdown. And then like that happened. It was just like, so we switched to virtual and everybody could still join every week on this virtual platform. But after several months and things like going into the second wave of COVID and lockdown again, I was just like, man, I got to make something, you know, and I want to tell our story. And then that coupled with finding out that shelter, the Hollywood Veterans Center, was closing down because they were losing funding. And they told me that I would be able to film there on location. Like, you know, I just said, we're making this movie now. Like the script is close enough. We'll get it. We'll keep tweaking it until we shoot. We're going to make this thing now. It's not as much money as we hope to make it for, but I'd already gotten the sort of stamp of approval from Sylvester Stallone. Like he put his
name. Yeah, he's the executive producer.
Exactly. And Braden Aftergood, his producing partner at Balboa Productions, is a good friend of mine and had helped with script notes and helped us get it there. And they were like, Nate, we support you. You know, it's going to be tough on that budget, but I understand you want to shoot at this place. It means too much to you to not. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I think in a weird way, there's an opportunity here, you know, through, tough circumstances, often there is opportunity to do some great things. And I was like, the city shut down, like people want to work, you know, and I think we'll be able to get some pretty talented folks for much less than we normally would. And we'll follow all the COVID protocols. We'll do it right. But like, we should just go, we should just do this now. And, they were like, all right, go. We will not be on set with you, but we support you from a distance. And they did. And I think just having their names on it helped, but we just decided to tell that story about how it all started. So in the film, we've created this composite character named Will Phillips, who is a former NFL player, first year out of the league. And he was a first round draft pick, all the promise in the world, but dealt with a lot of injuries, coaching changes, trades. He was never on a winning team. You know, the record 8-8 was the best they ever did when he played. And this character is based off.
I was going to say the old people.
Yeah. Or yeah. Okay. There's a lot of players that I know have been members of MVP, and they told these stories of just, it's just so wild how the ball the ball does have to bounce your way a few times.
Oh, I've had so many athletes on the podcast now, and it truly is. There's guys like, you know, well, Kyle Van Noy is a close friend of mine. He's won two Super Bowls with the Patriots, but when he was with Detroit, they basically released him after 2 years. He was injured, and then he never got a chance, and and they sent him to, he ends up being the captain of the defense on two Super Bowl teams, you know. And right. Three Super Bowl teams, won two of them. And so that circumstance, though, you go to the right team, the right coach, the right system. So many things have to go your way. And, you know, it really is almost like a luck of the draw kind of thing. It's kind of a crazy thing that a lot of people don't understand.
Well, we never know. Like, what if
Drew Bledsoe never got hurt? Right. You know what I mean? And he, you know, maybe they don't win as many Super Bowls, or maybe Drew Bledsoe wins a couple Super Bowls. And we never know about Tom. Right. You know, he's always just the backup, and just, you never know.
No.
But the way that it happened, and I think with Brady, obviously he's incredible, but he was probably peaking at that moment. Like, he didn't really, in college, he just wasn't quite, you know, what he was.
What time at college at Michigan.
Exactly. And he was, you know, he was slow and skinny, and it was just like, he had, obviously had the arm and all these things, but he got his nutrition right. He got himself prepared for that moment. That's a great lesson. Just stay ready, because you never know. And when that moment comes, if you have been out preparing everybody else and outworking them, the odds are you are gonna outshine them too when you get that moment. Yeah. Maybe you don't. You never know. But like, it's wild to see that come to fruition there. But it's.
I bet a lot of the guys that watch your film can appreciate that character, because it is such a common thing. And even if it wasn't them, they'd know so many guys that were probably in that position, you know.
I was just having this conversation with some guys on a text chain recently about, because I went to UT, so I'm a big Texas fan, and the five-star recruits is like this big thing. You know, you recruit these five-star athletes out of high school, but when you look at the numbers with all these big schools, those five-star athletes, like most of them never get drafted to the NFL. And that's crazy to think about, because they're just like, wait a minute, these are the cream of the crop. But there's so much more that goes into it beyond the injuries, beyond.
I like to watch. There's a YouTube channel that'll be like, what happened to, and they'll talk about the top recruits, the five stars, because only about 25 to 50 a year. Each position has one or two, right? Sometimes a few more, and they'll kind of like follow their stories. And most of them, it just never pans out.
Never pans out. It's wild, you know. And then you've got the guys that are. You know, Baker Mayfield walked on. You know what I mean? Ended up starting for Tech, and then eventually transferring to OU, winning the Heisman, first pick in the draft, like crazy. But he was not a five. So I don't even know if he was a three star. I have no idea. Yeah. You know, but like, it's wild. It's just, there's so much that goes into it. And so in this story, you know, Will Phillips, that character, everyone always respected the way he played the game. But it just, when you're not on winning teams and you're playing through pain and probably trying to do too much, it's just results vary, you know. And so he feels like a bust, and he feels like, I don't want to, you know, unless I'm on the field, like, I don't want to be associated with this game. I don't think it's right for me. And then finds out he's not going to have an opportunity to play anymore, and says, well, okay, maybe broadcasting's not so bad, and tries his hand at that, and it's just not what he thought. And he feels like he's the laughing stock of every conversation, and he's not. But it's just like this story in his head, you know, these voices in his head. And this veteran who's based off of Denver and another, this backstory is based off Denver and another veteran in our MVP family named AJ. And then really the story of the Zephyr, that Zephyr character, is based on so many other veteran stories.
Sure.
All that. It's kind of, they're both very composite characters. And that's the character I ended up playing. And so Zephyr meets Will, and they got nothing in common on paper, like nothing. You know, they just, black guy, white guy, different professions, different everything. But they start talking and realize they have like everything in common, you know, way more than they thought. And eventually kind of help each other figure out, you know, how to make that step and kind of come up with this concept for what MVP is now become. And it's very like the cast throughout, all the veterans are played by real veterans. Like every veteran character is played by a real vet. Most of those athletes are the real guys playing themselves, you know. There's a lot of cameos and things like that. And then we had the support of the NFL, like opening their doors for us, letting us shoot at NFL Network. you know, the use of the shield and like some of the logos from the teams, like that brings so much production value. And then the crew was mostly vets as well, you know, and some athletes sprinkled in, but, it was just this, became this like family that had a new mission to do this thing, you know, in the midst of COVID and tell our story. And I was terrified throughout the process of making it, 'cause I was thinking like, is, you know, you got people behind the camera that are telling you like, this is so good, this is great. And I'm like, of course you're telling me.
Yeah, right.
Like, this is my baby, you have to.
Yeah.
I'm like, this thing sucks, we're screwing up. I'm you know, I'm ruining this opportunity to like tell our story because I don't know what I'm doing and I'm pretty green, which I was.
Yeah.
But I just had-
You were acting and directing, so which is another element on top of it, I guess, right?
Yeah. That was definitely challenging, but I had such an incredible team and like, it was so collaborative. We were changing things as we were shooting.
Had you already been in Den of Thieves by then?
Yeah, because I've been in Den of Thieves.
Mayans,
yep. 12 Strong was the very first
project
I did. And then I got to be on This Is Us and then more recently like Terminal List and some other stuff. But a series called Medal of Honor that was on Netflix. So like I'd had that acting experience in front of the camera. And every time I was on set, like Den of Thieves is a great example because that director, Christian Gudegast, has become a really good friend and mentor, but I would come to set, even if I wasn't shooting that day, just like shadow.
Smart.
And just watch him, because he was super collaborative too. Like you'd have like a line in the script and you'd be like, so in this line, and he's just like, just say something like that, like whatever you want. Like, what do you think? What do you think you would say?
Yeah,
in
a way.
Cool. Thank you, cool. He's like, yeah, and he wrote it, you know, and it's like, he's not precious over every word. He's like, what matters is, the emotion, like, you know, are we getting to this place? Like, as long as we're getting to this place,
we don't care how we get there.
Yeah.
Just got
to
get there.
It doesn't have to be this exactly how I said it needs to go. He's like, I want you guys to be natural and kind of, and I felt like that would be, I mean, I had to be that way anyway, because I'm working with actors that are way more experienced than me and they know how to story. They're storytellers too, especially Mo McCrae. I don't say especially over the other ones, but I had such a close working relationship with Mo because he was there every day too. You know, he played that Will Phillips character. He is also a director and he showed up. Yeah. I made him an executive producer on the movie because he showed up every day on set, even when he wasn't filming, behind the camera, coaching me, coming up with ideas, you know, just very involved. And like I said, he calls it collaborative genius or collective genius or something like that. And it was just like, he's right. I mean, the fact that it was just this group of ideas, and at the end of the day, I got to make the final decision because I'm the director, but I want to hear all these ideas from everybody else and try to make the best one.
That's awesome. And so the movie's been out, kind of limited screenings so far, right? If people want, I mean, they're hearing about it, they're going to want to watch it. What's the best way? Where's the best place to send them to?
Well, so we released in September. We started screening it. It was in 35 theaters initially, and then on November 11th, it went to Amazon Prime and Apple TV, and people could rent it there. And you can still rent it there. But then just recently, Showtime licensed it as well. So if you have Showtime or a Showtime package on Paramount Plus, Hulu, some of these other places, you can watch it. I mean, it's out. But if you want to watch it as a group, that's the best way, I think. So I mean, I would say watch it on your own too. And if you enjoy it and you want to host a screening, like there's ways to do that. There's ways to figure that out. You know, FilmRise is the distribution company who, picked us up. They're essentially the studio on this now. And, you know, we're still setting up those screenings. I actually just was with my folks recently, and we screened it out in Reno, and like the University of Nevada football team came, and the head coach, and you know, a lot of veterans organizations and vets in the area. And it's like, it's a really special way to kind of share our story and learn more about MVP. But also like just bring people together to watch this, because there's some heavy stuff in there. You know, it's very authentic in the sense of it, the script is less, I co-wrote it with a veteran who was, from Wales, you know, so he has a different experience too. But that story is so much less us writing a script, especially the dialogue, and more kind of transcribing people's stories into a cohesive film. And yeah, so I mean, like when they're in that room, a lot, especially the vets, you know, they're just like, man, that's that's real, like that's raw.
That's really cool. So if people do want to do a private screening, do they just reach out to you or how's the...
They can, yeah, they can reach out to me. Honestly, you can reach out to me through, I got a website, nateboyer.org, and also through social media. But also if you go to, you know, go through Film Rise, look up Film Rise and MVP, the MVP movie, you'll be able to find the page where you can,
cool,
you know, start to go through that process. It's not very hard to do.
Yeah. What are some other ways that we can support all the stuff that you're doing, man?
I'd say go to vetsandplayers.org. That's a big one. And check out MVP. Learn more about MVP. If there's an opportunity to support us or throw an event, we're collaborative as well. We're always looking for ways to expand our message, expand our growth, and continue to open new chapters and new cities. And now we're finally at a place over the last year where we've got some, you know, some new leadership where myself and Jay can step back a little bit and let them kind of take the reins. We're still very involved. We actually have our gala coming up May 6th. I'm not sure if this will be out already, but May 6th in Dallas at the Star, with the Cowboys up in Frisco. And so we're starting to do those events, which would help us grow, but it doesn't have to be something like that. It can be very simple. You know what I mean? We're doing athletic challenges as well that are sort of MVP.
Well, and I loved it. I asked that because, you know, so many people I think want to help the vet community. They want to be a support and sometimes just don't know how. And so, I think it's such an easy way to support a group that's really doing some amazing things. And it's awesome, man.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for everything you do and for your service heart and for your service in the military, man.
Thank you, brother. That means a lot, dude.
Great to catch up again, brother.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Nate.
Thanks again for listening to this podcast. And this podcast was brought to you by Steve DeYoung over at Trillion Mortgage. I've sold thousands of homes in my real estate career, and there's nobody I trust more than Steve over at Trillion Mortgage. So reach out to him, give him a call if you're looking to refinance your home or to maybe buy a new property. Again, thank you for listening to the podcast. If you liked what you heard, do me a favor. This is a free podcast. The one thing I ask of my audience is to leave me a review. This just helps me to get better and better guests, to let more people know about this show so they too can benefit from the Jimmy Rex Show. So thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you on the next episode.